probably the biggest mistake I see a lot of new gardeners make is they just want to plant everything and do everything and get like 30 tomato plants and get 20 pepper plants, and they're just going to do all this stuff, and they're grabbing these weird plants and so many different things. And while it's so fun to try new stuff and to do new things, if you want to be able to maintain any kind of social life outside of your garden and your home throughout the summertime, you are going to have to go, okay, what can I feasibly do? What do I actually need to purchase? What is my family going to consume? You know, if you're going to go grow 3 okra plants and pickle tons of okra and use it in all these different things and freeze it and all that kind of stuff, like, does your family like okra?
Hi there, friend. Welcome to the Homestead Journey podcast. I'm Erin, and I'm absolutely thrilled that you are here. This isn't just any homesteading podcast. It's a journey we're taking together. Join me as I, along with my family and guests, share stories, educate, and lean into encouraging you in the art of homesteading. Each episode, we'll dive into the nitty-gritty of life on the farm, sharing tips, tricks, and tales to inspire and equip you on your own homesteading journey. And remember, no matter where you are on this path, you are not alone. I'm so glad you're here.
Hey friends, it is Erin with Wayland Farms today, and I'm so excited to chat with you. It has been a second, and I do apologize. I never know where to look. If you guys are watching this on YouTube, I never know where to focus my eyes at. I guess it's the little dot on my computer. So if I look like I'm trying to look all around, I'm still trying to figure this podcasting stuff out. I've only been doing it for 2+ years now, though the YouTube is new to me. So we're trying to incorporate that as well to get some people who just enjoy watching silly old me on YouTube. So, but we are going to talk today about gardening. About gardening while maintaining a fun summer, because I think sometimes it, as a homesteader, someone who's preserving or someone who has a goal of providing food for your family, I think sometimes we forget to add fun into what we're doing in the summertime. We get so focused on these needs that we're trying to meet for our families that sometimes things like going to the beach or taking fun activities and outings maybe get placed to the side. And so I just want to encourage you and maybe provide some tips so that you can find a balance. And all of our balances are going to be different. Plus, we're all in different seasons. I mean, this is our third summer here in Tennessee. And so the first two summers, honestly, we couldn't leave. I mean, we were establishing gardens. We were having the house worked on. So that was a season where for us, we knew we were just going to have to stay home more. And that was okay. We accepted that. I told the kids that we got a stock tank pool for them that they still absolutely love. They use it on the daily right now. And we provided a lot of fun things at home. We have rope swings. We have tons of stuff for them to play with outside. And so we knew that going places and doing activities outside of our home was not something that we could do a ton of. And so we pulled in. And so we decided, okay, we're going to make these 2 years because we have to, if we want to establish these things so that we can go on to do other things, we have to make this a priority now. And so we did that. And so I just kind of want to talk about that. And then what I'm doing different this year so that we can be more out and about. We can maybe do some more adventures than we were able to the last few years as we kind of like establish this homestead. And so, but this podcast, you guys, before I go any further, this podcast is again in partnership and sponsored by Roots and Harvest. It's a family-owned and celebrated company that supports homemade, homegrown living. Basically anything that you're going to need on your homestead, they have on their website, and they have great quality products. They are based in Ohio. They are staffed by DIY enthusiasts, and Roots and Harvest offers traditional supplies and hard to find items for literally every corner of your homestead. So they just kind of told me about, which falls great in line with this episode, that they have their own canning line with like canning jars and stuff. And so they want to send me some of those in a little bit to be able to preserve some of our harvest, which I'm so excited about, because if you guys have been here for any length of time, you know I am all about the canning. I'm all about preserving, drying, fermenting, all the things to do with the food, because it's one thing to have a great garden. It's another thing to be able to bring that inside and successfully put it away so that you can, you know, there's always those, like those memes and stuff about like spent $200 on my garden, got three tomatoes, and how that really gardening is kind of a waste of time and money. And that is just because it's not being done in an effective way. But when you do an effective way, you are not only providing a huge abundance for your family, but as long as you are preserving, you're providing that all year long and sustenance and health and like a, if you do organic in a way that you're just not going to be able to access from the store, like plucking it from your garden and walking into the house and making a salad just has so much more health benefits even than buying organic from the store. I mean, you do what you can in the season of life that you're in, but if you can have a garden and take that and use it for your family, it is such a blessing. And I want people to be able to realize that it's not hard. It can be done successfully. Yes. Does it take an initial investment of time and resources and money? Yes, it does. But once that investment is established, the sky's the limit with as far as you can go with that. And so I thank Roots and Harvest for just being a part of that. We're still doing our chicken series with them. If you guys have been on Instagram, if you follow me on there, I'll make sure to drop the link. We're sharing the whole chicken butchering process from start to finish as far as getting the baby chicks going on. I have great episodes, previous episodes that we've talked about chicken harvesting. We are 4 or 5 weeks long. I need to check the calendar for how long we've actually had them. I'm staring at them right now. They're outside my window, but we've been doing lots of reels, answering questions that people have about it. We've been talking about the chicken tractor, how we built it, how we move it, all the things. And so if that's something that you're curious about or you're thinking, you know, oh, it's going to be too much, it's too intimidating, I definitely encourage you to just hop on over there, look at that. I have it all saved to a highlight as well. And I shared a reel about all the products that we're using from Roots and Harvest, like the harvester, like the boiler, like the chicken plucker, all those things that are going to help us be able to do a successful harvest in a very efficient manner, and do it in a clean way and just a really good way so that we can have this amazing resource that we have literally grown throughout our whole yard as we just move them day in and day out. And we have not lost one yet. We have some heat coming up, so we'll see. But so far, we had 25 to start with, and we still have those. So, like, knock on wood, we went through some storms last night. There was tornado warnings all over the place. Poor Tennessee just really got beat down, but they have maintained life. So we're doing pretty good so far. So we're going to knock on wood and hope that continues. So I will drop the link to the Roots and Harvest. I also have a coupon code with them. I will add that at the bottom as well. So just make sure to take advantage of that. Look through some of the stuff they have. A lot of times with homesteading, it's called planning ahead. And so if we're going to do something, how much is that investment going to cost? And what do we need to save to be able to make that purchase so that we can do this investment? Just like with the chicken stuff. I mean, chicken harvesting products like the boiler, like the scalder, the plucker, like that's an investment. But once you've established that, just like establishing gardens, after that, it's just doing the same thing over and over and over again. And so that's the amazing thing about homesteading is yes, up front of the first few years are going to be a little more difficult as you establish this, but it's so amazing as far as homesteading because you have the option to do it as slow or as quickly as your budget allows and just kind of work within that and support others around you who maybe are doing something that you can't right now, but you do have the money to support them and purchase locally from them. So that's just kind of the beauty of a great community and just the whole homestead movement, truthfully. So we're going to get into gardening and I have 5 ways today. I've got stuff all over the place here as I have my notes. I am not one of those people who can just memorize everything. We were talking about with a friend the other day about how our brains are like Swiss cheese. And we literally can't remember anything because there's so much going on. And so the gardening lately has been huge for us because it was planting time. And so there's if you do things by seed, which I do most of mine, we're going to do the seed starts. We do them inside. We have our little heat mats, our lights, everything. That's pretty low maintenance as far as just making sure that they have constant water and they don't dry out because that's your biggest issue with starting seeds. But then once they hit this specific like point where they're growing out of their little pots and you have to transplant them, but you don't want to transplant them because you want to get them in the garden, like there is a specific time where it is go time. And the minute that garden is great and ready to go and the last frost is gone, you're out there transitioning these starts to the garden beds. And that takes a while. So we had about 2 weeks where I was weeding, prepping, mulching, transferring, hardening off, moving things over. It was just kind of this whole symphony. It was funny because my mother-in-law was over and she was asking, you know, like, how can I help you? with your planting, because I still had a lot of starts I hadn't put out there yet. And I was like, honestly, I have no method to my madness, and I can't have someone help me because my brain doesn't even really know. Like, I walk by a bed and I go, oh, I feel like this should go here. And I go grab that, or I wander this way and I go, well, this needs weeded, so let me take care of that real quick. Like, there is no, with my creative brain, and everyone is so different, and that's great. But with my creative brain, like, I cannot structure out today, I need to do this and this and this. I can do that. But if I walk out in the garden, I will immediately get distracted by this one thing that I feel right now I have to do. And that will just consume my whole time in the garden, and I will complete that one thing. And so at this point in time, I am okay with that because I always get everything, and I just kind of let the garden and my attitude, I guess, that day guide me in what I should be doing. And so my mother-in-law would play with the kids. They hung out inside. It was a really great time that we had with them. Travis and his dad made the fence over there for the cow with my dad. And so I just wandered around the garden, and then my sister came into town and she kind of hung out with the kids. I was like, can you just book this and make it every year so you can entertain and feed my children while I'm out there establishing these garden beds? Because my goal this year is to be able to go to the lake, to be able to go on activities, to be able to leave the house and not be like, oh my gosh, I need to get home and water. Or, oh my gosh, I need to get home and check this out. Or, I like last year we had the pigs and they were in just the worst structure possible. It was a impulse decision to get the pigs. I don't regret it. Like, I love being able to go out in the freezer and grab whatever we need, but we did not have correct fencing established for them. And so because of that, and not like the water setup and everything, it was not a sure thing. And so we were constantly having to make sure a few hours from home, okay, I got to go back in. I got to check on those pigs. And so a homestead is never a set it and forget it. You can't establish your gardens and then, you know, dust off your knees and walk away and be like, well, see you in a couple months for harvest. You know, that's not going to work. But there are ways where we don't have to be as involved constantly every day so that we can enjoy this time. Cause like, we homeschool, and so we're home a lot. I mean, and we really truly enjoy that. But summertime is my favorite time of the year. Like, honestly, now that we've become Tennessee people, or Tennesseans, how do you say that? I don't know if I could ever call myself that. Like, people might get mad. I don't know. But now that we live in Tennessee, I love the fall. Falls here are long and gorgeous, and there's tons of leaves. And so we do enjoy fall so much. But summertime has always been my season. And I feel like we've acclimated really well to the humidity. Is it brutal? Some days, yeah. Some days you open the door, walk out, and you go, nope. And you turn around, you walk right back in again. But most of the time, unless there's like an impending storm or something like that, it's completely doable, especially if you're going to go spend a day at the lake. We have Pickwick State Park, which is not really a lake. There's a dam there, and it's on the Tennessee River, and it's beautiful water. They have a sandy beach, and so it's gorgeous to be. They have tons of shade trees. Usually someone's there with their music playing. And so we just go there and I sit and I read magazines and the kids swim, or I'll go out and swim with them. And we just have an afternoon of it. And then there's tons of places around that. It's very Savannah, Tennessee. It's gorgeous. And there's so many people who come for the summer. Like, as soon as school gets out, the stores get busier. It's just one of those summertime towns. And it's so beautiful because there's so many different things to do there. And there's so many different like food trucks and just restaurants and just so many fun things to do. And I want to be able to wake up with the kids one morning and be like, hey, you want to go to the beach today? And just take off and go do that and not have to worry that something is going to go down at home that is going to leave me feeling guilty all day long for being gone. And so with the gardens, the first 2 years, I mean, the first year, it was just a blur because there was so much going on. Not everyone obviously is going to have that because we were rehabbing an old house and we had so many things we had to do. But year two, I would say, is probably more like a typical year of someone who moves into a new place. As you're establishing it, you're going, hey, do they have gardens? If there is gardens, you're probably going to want to change something about them, or expand it, or rehab it, or who knows. You know, gardening is so personal, and I believe that the garden space should be beautiful. You're kind of beautiful, because that's just going to make you enjoy your time out there, because you will be spending a significant amount of time out there in the summertime and you want it to be pleasurable. That's one of the things. Gardening should not ever be something that you hate to do, or you don't like to go out there, or it's frustrating. Like, we want gardening you know, as much as there is always going to be a hard in anything that we do, we still want it to be beautiful and fun. And so we want to establish a garden that we enjoy being in. If that means a fountain, if that means a bird feeder, if that means like partial shade garden, like whatever you want, a little pond, you know, put that beauty in there for you so that you look forward to going out and being in your garden and that you find that soothing and joy filled. And so, and maybe you don't even have a garden. Like maybe the place you've moved has no garden. I want to do a whole podcast on structuring your gardens and your house and your homestead, because I know I've done a podcast about that before, but I had someone who messaged me on Instagram the other day, and today actually, it was today, and they were very overwhelmed. They're like, when you are going to build or when you are doing this, what exactly, like, how do you know where to put the house? How do you know where to put the gardens? How do you know where the livestock should go? And to someone who maybe is looking into this life from a standpoint of always living in an urban environment, those are very valid questions that have a great answers to. If you want to, if you ask the questions, there's answers that are very logical to how you should lay out your farm. And so I definitely want to do that too. But as far as the garden goes and establishing, I have five things that I want to talk about today. I feel like I'm all over the place, you guys. I'm still exhausted from my 2 weeks of planting. And I was out there, I set myself a timer this morning because I was like, I cannot be out here all day long. I have so many other things to accomplish. I have to get inside. But this time of year is just, it's just rough, but it's not as rough now because I've established it and I've worked really hard so that I can be good maintenance. So I want to share that. So five ways. And the first one is going to be my new favorite from this year is adding wood bark / mulch. And there's so many different things that you can add to your garden beds, and there's different kinds of mulch that you can use. I like the wood mulch, and I'm going to share why. Because wood mulch, unlike if you use straw or if you use, there's like grass mulches and stuff, I have heard so many horror stories of people getting that kind and then the mulch going to seed in their gardens and then and just having their gardens overwhelmed with this supposed mulch that was supposed to be amazing that has now like taken over their garden beds and has just caused havoc. And that has terrified me, which is one of the reasons I have not ever mulched, is because I was like, listen, I have worked so hard to try to keep down the weeds that we have right now. Like I don't want to accidentally add more weeds and then have another huge problem. And so I'm just not going to mulch. I'm just going to water. But the thing with that is our soil here is very clay and it gets very hard, very fast, and it's very dense. And so I worked really hard to amend it. I've been doing really good, but I just noticed that without a barrier on top of that soil, man, it gets like a rock and you can't take your fingers and go in there. You have to take a physical like spade every single time you want to do something, a spade to even weed and loosen out the weeds. And I was like, listen, this is just, it's too much. It's too much. And it's also like burning my plants that I'm putting in there and causing stress on them. And how can I fix this? And so I was watching some YouTube videos and different things. And over again, they were saying wood bark, wood chips, wood mulch. And as I was looking into that, there were so many people who were talking about nitrogen issues and how if you put wood chips on the soil, then you can get nitrogen deficiency because the wood chips pull in the nitrogen. And while that is true, if you incorporate a first year mulch into your soil, that it will kind of rob some nutrients from your plants. If you just put it on the top of the soil, it's going to provide that barrier, it's going to provide that security, and it's also going to be putting nutrients into the soil. And then once it decomposes down about a year in, it's going to start like degrading so much that eventually it's just going to give back to the soil all that nitrogen that was in it, actually helping improve your soil and help improve the quality. And that would also help improve the density of our soil once we mix that in, because obviously wood is a much lighter, more like a cork-like substance. And so you put that in there and just mix a nice, fluffier soil. And so because I'm doing my in-ground garden bed this year, we have three garden beds. We have our kitchen garden. Cat over here sneezing, a cat sneezing and playing on the table. So I apologize. She got out from where she was supposed to be, not bothering me. But we have our kitchen garden, which is right like 20 feet from our door. And that's where I have all my herbs. So if I'm making something for dinner and I need parsley or I need rosemary or I need thyme, I'm going to run out there, basil, and I'm going to just be able to grab it, turn right back around, walk right back inside, chop it up, throw it in whatever dish I'm making. And it's very, very easy. It's also my medicinal garden, so I have a lot of my medicinal herbs in there as well. calendula, sunflower, and then I just have a lot of beautiful flowers in there because it's kind of, it's my tiniest garden, but honestly, it's like one of my favorites because it's the first one I have a lot of perennials in there. And so it's the one, the first ones to come back every year, the first one to have things bud out and bloom. I have my chamomile. Chamomile is one of the first ones that came out. Borage is one of the first ones that came out, and it's just gorgeous. I absolutely love it. And so I have that garden, and then I have my big kitchen or canning garden, which is a little bit further on. That one has the fountain in it. It's right next to the chicken coop. And then my additional third garden this year is my row crop garden. And so for that one, I did the whole above ground cardboard. Then I laid fertilizer, mulch, and all that kind of stuff. And I made my first no-till garden bed, I guess is what you call it. And so I used the mulch for the rows. I didn't put it like on the top. I mulched the rows. I also did a zinnia patch, which I mulched the rows, and I kind of piled all the dirt up. And as the plants grow up, I'll mulch around the plants too, so that I will prevent the weeds from coming up. And so I decided to do mulch originally for the in-ground no-till garden bed, and I just loved working with it, and I loved how it looked. And I started putting the mulch around some of the flower beds in the front of my house. I was like, man, this looks really good. And I was researching and watching YouTube videos on how it's just so great for the soil, and they were showing before and afters of like a year difference of using the mulch versus not using the mulch and what it had done to the plants. And I was like, this could be a huge game changer for me. And so I started adding it first to my flower beds because I was like, I'm not going to add these to my vegetable and herb beds yet, because if I put this mulch on in a week or so down the road, everything turns yellow and dies. Like I'd rather have the flowers die than the food that I worked very hard over the last little bit to establish die. And so I put it on the flower beds, and the flower beds flourished. And it was so fun because I would water not for a week and go over there and like push back the mulch and see the ground. And not only was the soil still moist and nice, I know everyone hates that word, and great, but like I could literally stick my hand in and pull out a whole handful of dirt, which I could not do if I didn't have the mulch covering it on the top, keeping that layer of dirt soft. And so I was just like extremely impressed with what it was doing only a week or two in with these garden beds. And I was like, I'm going for it. Like I'm putting it on everything. And so I have a mulch guy right down my road. So we have a lot, it's on the same road as us. We have a logging company, and right next to them, they sell the mulch. And so I call my mulch guy and I'm like, hey, I'm the lady down the road. Can I run over and grab some mulch? And so I was like, come on over. And so I pay $30 for a yard. There is something called Chip Drop, which is a free service that you can sign up for. You just go to chipdrop.com. And if there's like utility companies or anything that are clearing out like their utility boxes or beside the road or whatever in your area, and they need to drop the mulch, they will pull up, and whatever house is on the list next, they drop it off at that house. Now, because we are so rural, and when I went to the site, there was no guarantee of like when you would need this, and I literally needed it now. Maybe if I did it the beginning of winter or something, and then I had a few months where it didn't matter when they dropped it off, that might have worked. But at the time when I was researching it, I needed it right now, and I don't think it would have happened anywhere close to right then. So I just went ahead, ran down the road, asked him which was the best kind. Your mulch people are probably extremely knowledgeable. I would never buy mulch from like a Home Depot or a Lowe's or a box store, just because most of those mulches have colorants or dyes placed in them. It's going to be way more expensive to buy like per plastic 50-pound bag or whatever versus paying $30 for a literal huge scoopful of mulch that they put in the back of your truck. And you just ask them like, this is what I need it for. I have it around vegetables. Is it okay to be on top of the soil? And he was like, yes, it's totally fine to be on the top of the soil. Don't mix it into the soil, because again, it'll deplete the soil of nitrogen until it starts to decompose, which then it will give back, but that will be after your planting season's over. So this time next year when I'm planting, that would be an acceptable time to mix that mulch in and to really aerate and move those beds around before I added my additional layer of mulch on top. My goal is to never have to go to the store and buy any kind of fertilizer, be it organic or not. I would like to be able to use my cow and my chickens to make fertilizer teas and to do all the different kind of stuff here to utilize what we have, because my whole goal is to spend less at the store. Like, yes, I want to be self-sufficient, but I also want to be very budget friendly. And I don't want to be going, okay, you know, oh, it's springtime, I'm going to have to buy all these different kind of organic fertilizers, and I'm going to have to buy all this additional soil to, you know, infuse my bed with new nutrients. Like, I want to say, listen, I have a lot of poop. around my house. Let's just be real here. Like, I got cat poop, I got chicken and duck poop. Like, we got tons of poop out there. So how can I use that, which I know has great nutrients, even though it's too hot to put directly on your bed? Like, how can I utilize that to make something that I can then apply to my beds? And there's just so many different ways out there. So don't get discouraged in thinking that a garden is going to cost a lot. It can do that if you like, or you can say, dig into, okay, well, what other animals or what other things do I have at home to utilize? Or is there, you know, a cow farm down the road that wouldn't mind sharing some of its poop with me, you know, and be that person that's weird, but that gets the good deals and finds great things because they're willing to just kind of put themselves out there. And so that's just kind of what I want to do, is I want to lean into, I'll be fine giving my neighbor down the road $30 for chips every year. Like, to me, that seems way better than giving it to a big box store. It's going to stay literally right on my block, support my neighbor down the road, and they can go use that to buy their groceries or whatever that they want to do. And so I just feel that as much as I can give into my community, I wholeheartedly want to do that. And so I'm totally fine with paying my mulch guy. And so I put the mulch everywhere. And so you guys can follow along definitely on Instagram, because I'm on there all the time sharing everything, and you can see my gardens in real time. I had some people give me some flack on using the wood mulch, but honestly, like, we'll see how it actually holds out. But as of right now, I am beyond extremely impressed with how amazing it's doing out there. And I created a reel yesterday kind of sharing and showing my soil and showing the soil and how hard it was on the spots that I had not put it versus the spots that I have. And it's pretty amazing, I'm not going to lie. So mulch your beds. That is rule, or not rule, that's tip number one, so that you will be able to hold that water and keep those weeds out and just spend way less time once planting is done into your gardens. And the next is going to be garden size. Now, probably the biggest mistake I see a lot of new gardeners make is they just want to plant everything and do everything and get like 30 tomato plants and get 20 pepper plants, and they're just going to do all this stuff, and they're grabbing these weird plants and so many different things. And while it's so fun to try new stuff and to do new things, if you want to be able to maintain any kind of social life outside of your garden and your home throughout the summertime, you are going to have to go, okay, what can I feasibly do? What do I actually need to purchase? What is my family going to consume? You know, if you're going to go grow 3 okra plants and pickle tons of okra and use it in all these different things and freeze it and all that kind of stuff, like, does your family like okra? Because if they don't, that's going to be hours of time spent in the kitchen to make some beautiful things that are going to sit on your shelves in these cans for years. And eventually you're going to be like, are they even good? Should I eat them? Should I not? And then you're going to throw them out, and it's going to feel sad. And so what does your family really, really enjoy? For the first few years, or for the first year at least, just really lean into what you know you're going to consume. If you want to plant a couple okra plants, that's, you have to have 2 for pollinating. But if you want to plant a couple okra plants, that's fine. But you don't feel like you need to can those. Can what you know you're going to use first and just eat those fresh. And when they dry up and die, call it a day. There's nothing that says everything that you grow in that garden needs to be preserved for the winter time. There's a lot of things out there that I don't preserve, and there's just a summertime treat that we enjoy that time of year. And that's okay. Then there's my crop plants, like my peppers, like my tomatoes, like my things like that, to where my onions, potatoes, like stuff that you know you're going to be having in your pantry that is going to use to sustain you throughout the wintertime and to avoid going to purchase at the store because you grew it yourself. And so probably another one of the things is too many of a good thing. So 20 tomato plants for a family of 4 is just completely unnecessary for the most part. As long as you tend those tomato plants well, you prune them correctly, you watch over them, and then you harvest them and process them, harvest, process, you probably only need 8 to 10 really good tomato plants to be able to get a nice harvest of canned tomatoes, salsa, tomato sauce, paste, like all these different things. By just maintaining less amount of plants, but maintaining them better. And then I just tomato plants can go crazy and they can get so overwhelming. And then I think a lot of times a lot of them will die or they'll blow over or things will happen to them. And then we'll think, okay, well, now I need to get more tomato plants because I didn't even get as many tomatoes as I wanted this year, when really it's scaling down so that your tomatoes can produce more. Because most tomato plants, especially that I plant, are indeterminate tomato plant varieties. And so indeterminate means that there is not a specific amount of tomatoes that plant is going to produce. It is going to continue to produce as long as it is healthy until it freezes. Now, there's determinate tomato plants that are only going to make a specific amount of tomatoes, and that's done. That's it. That they've hit their limit and they're done. And there's some great determinant varieties out there too that are just really beautiful and wonderful to eat and consume. But for my canning tomatoes, I'm always getting indeterminate tomatoes so that I can really, really, I'm just watching chickens out there being super naughty. We have 7 roosters that were not purposeful, and they are just brutalizing our hens. And so we have to take care of those. And so I was just watching the hen to make sure she's okay. Sorry. Anyhow, I'm in front of like 7 picture windows that are all open right now. And so that's kind of my view as I do my podcast with you guys. But always plant for your canning purposes indeterminate tomato plants that will continue to produce, and then just maintain the plants well. Again, watch my stories. I am growing them away this year that I believe is going to be the best so far. I've tried so many different ways as far as how when they get big and they blow over and then you have to hold them up with T-posts, and we've tried rope and we've tried cages and we've tried so many different things. And they've all been okay, but they haven't been great. And I've seen this way where we're doing with like panel fencing, and you literally hook them to the panel fencing as they go up. And I've seen so many people successfully do it that way. And so we're going to try that this year and see how that works. I have a sneaky inclination it's probably going to be the best, because it will not blow over, like, because we get a lot of wind. In Tennessee, we get a lot of wind. And I do have some windbreaks in my garden for that purpose, but still, it doesn't work sometimes. Those storms here can come from different directions, and so you're just never quite sure. So plant less, but tend them well. And I believe that that's just going to be easier for you to maintain those garden beds. It's going to be easier for you to watch over and care for those plants, and that you still will get a great harvest. And once you've proven to yourself that you tended those plants well, you were able to harvest them good. If you come out and say, listen, I could have used more tomatoes next year, well, then add a few more plants onto that. But just slowly work your way up. And as long as you harvest something from them, like, prove to yourself the first year that you can do it, and don't get yourself so overwhelmed that you have burnout and you don't do it year number two, because you literally need a year of recuperation after having 30 plants and being in the kitchen 24/7 and never sleeping for like the whole harvest season. And honestly, like, the first year we had garden one, and we had a small garden two. And then the second year I expanded both of those. And this is the third year where I'm adding the other one on as well. And so every year I add a little bit more, and I get excited for that, because the other ones are so much easier to maintain because I worked on them for 2 years now, that it's not so stressful to add another one, because these ones I've got down to a science, you know? Okay, number 3, companion planting. So I think a lot of times in the garden, aesthetically, we want plant space, plant space, plant space, or we want it to aesthetically be like this in a row like this, or we want this flower here and this. And truthfully, the more dead air or dead ground we have in a garden bed allows for the sun to hit the ground more, causing more of the soil to harden, to reduce the water in the soil quicker, to be able to get more weeds even with the mulch. I mean, mulching is great, but obviously it's not going to prevent all weeds. But when you take that dead space in those garden beds and you add something in there, that's going to greatly reduce the need for weeding and that kind of stuff, because you're crowding out the sun's ability to get to the soil by another plant that can be beneficial, that can take that space and utilize it to your advantage, and not just have you constantly having to weed that spot. So with tomatoes, for example, if you have tomatoes, girl, throw in some basil beside those tomatoes. Sir, throw in some parsley beside something. Like, put some of those together. And honestly, herbs, I find there's a lot of herbs that bugs have an aversion to. And there's a lot of like marigolds, calendula, nasturtiums. Bugs don't love those. Bugs don't love chives. They don't like any kind of like the onions and that kind of stuff. So plant some chives in the corners of your tomato beds, or maybe the plants that you struggle with bugs with. Plant some of these plants that bugs have aversions to next to these, and just experiment and see what works really well with you. I did geraniums in all my beds last year, but I am leaning more towards putting onions next to things because they really don't like a lot of the onion plants. And so I'm just throwing stuff in everywhere. And if I feel like something's struggling, like one of my main, like my tomatoes struggling, it's getting crowded out by the basil, I'll just rip that basil out and I'll give that tomato more room. Maybe later on the season, I don't have room for both my bed because the tomato's grown so much to where it needs that whole space. Well, I'll just rip up that additional basil and give that tomato the room that it needs. But at least I've contain that spot. I've been able to use that basil. I've been able to help the soil there. So when I pull that out and that tomato takes that space over, it's ready for it. And I've just maintained that well. And I've gotten something out of it in this waiting period as the tomato grew and eventually took up that space. And so fill the holes, friend. Anytime you see something out there, throw a small little plant in there, throw a small little flower in there. Nasturtiums are great. Calendula is great. Calendula can get kind of big. Nasturtiums are probably the best. I forget the other one I said. Well, anyhow, I'll think of it. Marigolds. Throw some of those in there. Those ones don't get too big and they kind of like just work with the space that they're in anyhow. I'm going to try marigolds and nasturtiums next to my pumpkins this year because my pumpkins have been non-existent. Like I plant them and they immediately get eaten by bugs and wither and die. So we're going to hope that if you have pumpkins in the South, friends, organic growing, if you have tips for me, send them my way because I never had plant problems with them in the Pacific Northwest, but it is a whole different ball game with bugs in the South. Okay. Tip number four, irrigation drip system. So I have not personally done irrigation because we have a well here. We have a well that is on death's door. It needs some maintenance. It needs some things done to it. And so I am not going to burden it with additional things at this point in time. We're just praying it gets us through until probably fall when we're going to try to maintenance it. And that's another pleasure of purchasing an old farm is our water heater went out. The well's going out, like everything, you move into a new place. The fridge was dead when we came here, like we're just reviving this place. But anyhow, I cannot do that right now. It's just too much for us. And I have so many different gardens in such different like lengths of distance from the well that it would just be a lot. So I hand water. The mulch is also really good with that. And we're very wet here in the South. Anyhow, we have had so many storms these past 2 weeks that I have literally not had to water for probably 2 weeks. And it's been amazing. So it kind of depends on the area. It depends again on what you have. If you're an urban farmer, it's probably easier to install drip irrigation. If that's something that is appealing to you and you can set a timer and set your drip irrigation to go, overhead watering is not great anyhow. So in the summertime, especially when my plants leaf out really well, I do water as close to the trunk of the plant as possible and not over water all over the leaves and everything. That can kind of help with doing that can aggravate like rot and stuff, blossom rot on tomatoes and things like that when you have water kind of pooling in the tops of the tomatoes and different plants. So that's not ideal. So I always water just the soil as much as possible. But if you can do drip irrigation, all the better. And that will save you a ton of time not having to head out there and water every single day. And then tip number five, choose low maintenance varieties or varieties of plants that work really well in your area. So one of the YouTubes, I buy a lot of seeds from Botanical Interest. I have so many seed companies I love, but Botanical Interest is really nice because they have a great companion YouTube channel called Epic Gardening. And they show a myriad of different planters in different parts of the United States and what varieties of certain plants work well in those places. So like they introduced a person who lived in the Carolinas, which is not very far from me. They showed a cabbage that worked really well with the early summer heat more than some that are bred more for that just don't take our kind of humid weather. And there was also a kind of basil that I'm growing this year that works better in the southern climate that doesn't bolt so quickly as a traditional basil that I would have grown when I lived in the Pacific Northwest. And so it's really that kind of stuff is the kind of like reconnaissance I do in the winter time. So in the winter, when I can't plant, I learn. And so I dig into the YouTube channels. I dig into what I want from my garden. I watch these videos. I watch other gardeners and I make a physical list or I'll just make my seed orders. I'll be watching the YouTube video on my phone, like placing my order for what I want to plant this year so I don't forget. So when the time comes, that variety that they told me about is already in my seed kit and I can just pop it open, stick in a seed cell tray and know that that plant is going to work best for my area. And so it's just kind of what works best. So research that and then just how hard something is to grow. If there's a specific kind of plant that's hard to grow, is that something that you want to devote your time to this year? Or is that something that you're going to try, get discouraged with, eventually give up, and then feel bad because you feel like you let that plant down or you didn't get the harvest that you wanted to or the beauty that you wanted to add that plant because it's just too much. It was just too much for you and you gave up. Like there is some years where we can lean into a harder gardening year. And there are some years where we're just like, listen, I want the harvest. I want my jars lying on the shelves, but I want no additional work and I want to be as efficient, effective, and quick as possible. And those are the years where you just plant the tomatoes and you just plant the basics and you call it good and you harvest, you maintain it, and then you move on and you live your life and you go swim. And so I think a lot of time gardening gets a very bad rap as far as like, oh, you know, if you're gardening, goodbye to your summer. And it just doesn't have to be that way. You personalize it to work what works best for you. And you do a little research ahead of time so that come planting season, you are prepared. You know what you're willing to give. You know what's going to be required of you. And you just do it. And that's such a fun, freeing feeling. And so we're planning to do a lot of, we love Shiloh, which is a battlefield here close to us. And me and the kids, they have so many things where you can go there and there's a park agent they can walk you through, or you can bike through some of these parks. There's so many beautiful places to bike in the summertime here. And so I need to get my bike fixed. I have kind of flattened my bike, you guys, for I think literally 3 years. Travis bought my bike. I loved it. It is the prettiest teal color. It's an amazing bike, but I didn't really use it a ton when we moved our last time. Then here, it's just biking at our house is not really something that we can do, but we can take our bikes places and have some really amazing bike trails. And we have our kayaks we brought with us. You guys haven't used them one time since we've moved here. And people all the time are telling me all these different places to kayak and we just haven't had the chance, but we don't have pigs this year. We have our butcher chicks, but the nice thing about butcher chickens is you only have like 8 weeks and you're done. And so you start them pretty early in the spring. And by beginning of summer, they're already in your freezer and you can check that off and just move on with your life. And so the maintenance for us will just be our milk cow, which is due in October. So she's good for the summertime. We just give her shade, keep the flies off of her, keep her happy and fed. She'll be good. We have the chickens and stuff, which we allow to free range. When we're home, they are out free ranging. They get shade. We have our pond. Like they are happy as clams. I'm so excited. I just am really excited for the summer and everything that we have the ability to do because we've set ourselves up for success. And so I hope this is beneficial to you, that it is encouraging to you, and that you can lean into a really joyous and happy summer. I think next time when we come on, I was going to touch on it today, but I want to ask people in Instagram. And so if you have questions, I'm going to talk about children on the homestead and chores and what we have the kids do in companionship with us so that we all work together as a team on the homestead, and the responsibilities that we give them and those responsibilities that they have to do every day, even along with their school. And just kind of like, what questions do you have about that? We had people who had questions about butchering and children and like how, that sounded really bad, butchering animals in tandem with having children and how they process that and how to teach them about that, especially if you come from an urban area. So just lots. We have lots. We are chatting a lot over on Instagram lately. So I definitely encourage you to hang out there. Send me your questions and I will see you guys back hopefully next week. I was kind of thinking of saying this is going to be an every other week thing, but I think honestly the hard part of the gardening is past now. And so I can pop back on here at a more reasonable, like a guaranteed weekly endeavor versus just like the craziness of the last 4 weeks or so. And that I wasn't on here as much as I had hoped. So until next time, friends, enjoy.
If you found this episode inspiring or encouraging today, I would love for you to give it a 5-star review, send it to some friends who are in the homestead movement, and let's share this knowledge and learn together. Thanks so much, friends. We'll see you next time.